Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Blog Talk Radio, frankly speaking, and Candid Frank Live says, this sucks! Let's have a good night.
To Blog Talk Radio, and I am Frank Stanishi, the host of Candid Frank Live. And tonight, it is my pleasure to introduce to you a brand new co-anchor with me, and also someone who later on in the season will be finding out what's going on with the Argos out in the field, at their training camp, at their games, in their dressing room. We're going to have some fun. And I hope you like him as much as I like him. The teenager, and he is an Argo Admiral. He's a YouTube reporter. And he is here tonight to share with us his knowledge of the free agency situation in the CFL. All the teams, including our hometown Argos, have players they have not signed, have players they've released. And now those players, as of 12 noon on Friday, February the 15th, will have the opportunity to sign with other teams. On the same token, some teams will be able to sign their players once their players get the idea of what's out there for them. So we have a lot of different scenarios. We have a lot of different players. And we brought in our local expert, our new Candid Frank Live expert, Daniela Franceschi. And let's give her a start. And we'll start with Montreal Alouettes.
Okay, so the Alouettes enter this free agency period more so without maybe even in mind signing new players, but finding a new head coach. Of course, Mark Trestman found a new job with the Chicago Bears as the head coach, taking over.
Hey, how's it going, handsome?
So he's moving to the south of the
border. Holy crap, I'm getting
right
tired of this.
After that happened,
I won't believe what happened today. I have two computers down here. I couldn't log on with either of the computers. Then I have a phone in the office. I couldn't log on with the phone in the office.
Commodity for this team,
that's
for sure, especially with new coaching staff coming in. Jim Fox got a lot of work to do. We've got a few guys, key guys that are going to be on the market come Friday. Dwight Anderson, probably the best defensive back in the free agency period, along with the likes of Tyron Brackenridge and Deion Beasley, as well as you can throw in Evan McCullough in that mix. A lot of teams will draw, he'll draw interest from a lot of teams around the league. It's interesting, the running back position, especially with Brandon Whitaker, who was well on pace to over 1,000 yards last year. He ran for that in 2011, had a career high in 2011, was looking bright for him, suffered an ACL tear in week 12 of this past season, missed the rest of the season. Victor Anderson and Chris Jennings were bouncing back and forth as the starting running back. But Brandon Whitaker, if he doesn't sign up with Montreal, I think there's a lot of teams that he can really fit in well on. He's got nobody can deny his talent. He can really fit in. Teams such as even maybe the Argonauts, we'll get to that later, though. It's a possibility that I can foresee maybe if Chad Kacker, pending he does not sign with the Argonauts. And from there, we want to also note that Adrian McPherson, who was the Owls' longtime backup quarterback for the past few years, they released him. They have a lot of young quarterback talent as well, the Alouettes. They brought in Kyle Quinlan again, who they signed. He's the Heck Crichton winner from 2012 in the CIS. As well, they want to get some more weapons around Anthony Calvillo, so that included Arlan Bruce, and that as well on the defensive end, bringing in more veteran talent like Byron Parker, who they snagged up after the BC Lions cut him as well. So that's what we have for the Alouettes forecast heading into Friday.
Now, the biggest thing with the Alouettes, as you said, is the coach. When they first announced the hunt to begin, they were very clear. They wanted a French-speaking coach. They wanted somebody that could communicate with the community, a local guy. Do you think they're having difficulty finding a guy with that background?
I think any time teams look for coaches, especially in the Alouettes case, in any Montreal team's case, as we've seen with the Canadiens as well in the NHL, it's very difficult to find a head coach to meet all their needs and all their requirements, especially in the CFL. And Mark Trestman was a perfect fit in Montreal. Certainly no fan or no executive in that organization wanted him to leave and go and head south of the border, but the opportunity presented itself, he went. And I think the Alouettes and Jim Popp right now might be a little bit unenthusiastic, not very excited about this free agency period coming up. They got to find a head coach first, because usually the head coach might have some, not all the say, but some say in what players and what type of players he wants on his roster. So definitely it's a priority for Jim Popp to go and get a head coach before any moves, in my opinion, be made from this team.
Now, what do you think the chances are of a college, Canadian college quarterback quarterbacking the Alouettes in a couple of years?
I definitely would like to see it happen. It's very rare, and it's never happened before. Obviously, it's very it would be an unusual sight. But Kyle Quinlan is a man that was playing amongst boys last year in McMaster, and I'd love to see him succeed in Montreal, specifically behind Anthony Calvillo. The door is open for that backup quarterback spot in Montreal, so whoever might arise into that position, rise to the task, and when Calvillo does retire eventually, whether it's this upcoming season at the end of this year or the next year, the opportunity is certainly there. And Kyle Quinlan has everything, in my opinion, from watching him vividly in his run to the Vanier Cup, back-to-back years, obviously losing a lot this past season, but nonetheless, incredible arm. He definitely looked like he could play in the CFL. He made everybody around him better, could run the football really well, had set a lot of records, won the Heck Crichton Trophy again. So definitely it's an opportunity for him to erupt and to become and step up as the all-starting quarterback when Anthony Calvillo does retire.
Well, they have an opportunity to grow. I think Calvillo's going to try. The best that they can hope for right now this year is that he brings some respectability.
Yep.
The difficulty with that team is they have a big turnover, not just the coaching, but also players. So it'll
Absolutely.
Be tough. It'll
yeah,
be tough.
And also to note on that, the Owls actually also re-signed a couple of players today, keeping Chip Cox, which to me is a huge move. He was really one of their stud defensive players last year. They re-signed him, extended S.J. Green, and extended Eric DeLaurier, who is a younger wide receiver. They need younger talent on this team so that they can sustain the excellence that they've had in this city. And really, Calvillo and the offense, to me, is a key for them this year. You noted it as well, the respectability factor. How competitive are they going to be? We don't know. They should still be a playoff team. But it all really hinges on if Anthony Calvillo can stay healthy, if this team builds around him correctly, gets some good weapons, builds some with some more young and veteran talent mixed together, and if the coach comes in and fits well. That all comes together at the end, and we'll see what happens with Montreal.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, let's move east and skip the Argos and go right to the Tiger Cats.
Yeah. Everybody, as an Argonauts fan myself, the team that we all love to hate, but definitely a team that is looking for some bright spots and will look to shore up the defensive side of the football this offseason. That's definitely one of their assets. They were last in a lot of defensive categories last year, including giving up the most rushing touchdowns with 29. That tells you something that they might need to be adding up front. They've allowed the second least quarterback sacks. The Argonauts were last in that category. We'll get to the Argos afterwards, as we noted. But definitely a lot of needs for this team. They started and had a head start a little bit, going out and getting James Patrick from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He was cut. They immediately picked him up. They need a lot of depth in the secondary. They should be looking at guys like Dwight Anderson, like Deion Beasley, even Evan McCullough, who's been rumored to be in discussions with them. They're looking to shore up, especially the secondary, more so the secondary than any part of that defense, because we know they have a strong offense. They have the league's leading passer in Henry Burris, the most explosive returner and wide receiver combination that we've seen in recent memory in Chris Williams, along with Andy Fantuz, Samuel Giguere, Andrea Jones, filling out that whole receiving group. They're going to put up points, but it's all up to the defensive game for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
this past year, the Hamilton Tiger Cats had an absolutely wonderful offense. Their defense wasn't good enough to make those points count. So you're right. They're going to need some work in stopping the rush. But they're also going to have a decent linebacking core. The trade with Edmonton, was it to resolve that issue, to help their linebacking core?
It was a mixture of building from the secondary and moving down and continuing to get players that they feel can play. For James Patrick, he had 48 tackles in 2012, an aggressive player, somebody that they would like definitely to play, maybe even the secondary, some secondary positions like DB, cornerback possibly, or even move down to the linebacker position. There's a lot. They want to just shore up the defense as much as possible because, as you noted, and as we talked about off-air as well, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, really, the offense is not the issue, and you just said it again. The defense didn't stand up for them this year, and that's where they struggled, and they're going to need to improve a lot, and that's certainly their number one priority heading into Friday, is finding guys that are going to come in and be able to right away produce immediately come June when training camp rolls around in the preseason. And they need to make a statement early on because teams were able to run all over them, throw all over them. We saw in the final game of the regular season against the Argonauts where Zach Caleros, Trevor Harris, they were, and Jerris Jackson were all able to run over them and were able to throw the ball over them, and everybody was so successful. That game was a high-scoring game where the Argonauts played their third and fourth stringers, and the Ticats had an opportunity to make the playoffs and could not hold them out. And that's definitely disappointing if you're a Ticats fan.
Absolutely. That was one of the building blocks for the Toronto Argonauts on their way to their Grey Cup championship. Another thing, one last thing on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. It appears to me, and I've stated it before, but I'm dying to hear your opinion. It appears to me that Kent Austin is applying the same plan that Jim Barker applied. And that is, as the GM, he's sitting in the saddle of the coach. And now he's going to see up and close and personal his players and what he has. And then when he figures out what he has, he's going to turn the coaching reins over to a coach that he feels is a fit with the Hamilton players. What's your opinion on that? The same way Jim Barker did. Exactly.
I couldn't agree more, actually. It looks a lot of parallels drawn right at the moment. And you look at Jim Barker, he came in 2010, a roster that was completely in shambles. Really, a lot of people didn't know a lot of the players. The mainstays were the likes of Ronald Flemons and Jordan Younger. But beyond that, a lot of players on this team nobody really knew of, and especially the quarterback position, nobody knew about anyone. Cleo Lemon emerged as a quarterback, and they ended up making the playoffs. And then Jim Barker, of course, had a disaster 2011. But everything came to a perfect storm for him in Toronto. He found a great head coach, as we now know, great coordinators, great supporting staff coaches, a lot of guys that just fit in well. Ended up making, obviously, one of the biggest trades that we've seen in CFL history in recent memory with Ricky Ray. But a lot of stuff went well and was really fortunate for Jim Barker to happen. But Kent Austin might do a similar thing. He's definitely going to be more hands-on this year, get a good feel, as you said, of the players in Hamilton. Fans should be definitely excited. But for me, the Ticats this year, if they don't really go out and fix that defense, and maybe Kent Austin can bring some more experience to that defense, then right now this might be a building year for the Ticats. Continue to build. We know their offense is solid, but if the defense doesn't help you out at least a little bit, you're not going to make the playoffs in the CFL.
We also know that they won't be playing at home.
That's correct.
So that's another issue that they don't have so much pressure on them, in my opinion, to win this year. In my opinion. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but still, that's how I feel. Moving on now to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. The team that has multi-personalities, and I don't mean individual players. I mean the team that has multi-personalities.
Well, they went from being Swaggerville in 2011 to being one of the worst teams in the league in 2012, losing Paul Lapolis, firing him, bringing in Tim Burke, a disaster season for them. Swaggerville absolutely gone out the window. But the one thing that might rejuvenate them, so to speak, this year is the fact that, and I think this might really play a bit of a factor and bring the fans back even more excited for this season, the fact that they're getting their new stadium finally that they were supposed to get last year, but ended up being delayed, and they kind of did get screwed over a little bit, not by the league, but by the fact that it wasn't ready in time. They played their first four games on the road, and that really hurt them when they looked at the grand scheme of things, losing four straight on the road to open the season. So Investors Group Field better be home sweet home for them this year if they want to do anything special in their inauguration season into that stadium. But also, they have a lot of free agents that I think will draw a lot of attention off the market. We already talked a little bit about Deion Beasley, but there's another couple defensive linemen that I think would fit in perfectly with a lot of teams in this league. Hamilton, Toronto, teams that are looking for size up front, that are looking for sacks, that are looking for veteran talent up front. Jason Vega, who had 5 sacks last year and 40 tackles, and Bryant Turner, who had 6 sacks in 2012. Them playing alongside each other, 11 in total. They were solid for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last year, a bright spot for them. Those two should definitely draw a lot of attention on the free agent market. The Bombers might want to definitely sign, if they can sign Beasley, Vega, and Turner, they should go out and do all of that because it would shore up their defense for sure. A defense that has kept some pieces in place. Jonathan Hefney re-signing with them. So they want to keep these pieces there and more so maybe focus on the offensive side of the football, where I think they have a lot more issues than on the defensive side.
Now, they're a team that by my definition alone, has not made very many moves. They've been pretty quiet over the offseason. Why is that?
Well, I think, especially when you look at one area for me that I think the Bombers, whether somebody really steps up in this position or that they go and acquire somebody, it's the quarterback position. This is a team that, regardless that Buck Pierce led them to the Grey Cup in 2011, this is a team that hasn't had a consistent starting quarterback in a while. And that's something that a position where I think, obviously, we know in the CFL, it's a quarterback-driven league. We saw what the Argonauts did getting Ricky Ray and how quick that turnaround came about, and they win the Grey Cup right away. For Winnipeg, you have Buck Pierce, Joey Elliott, and Alex Brink competing for the starting job if you come training camp in June. I'm not sure you're really confident as a fan or even as an executive in that organization to see those three men competing. But unfortunately, when you see Mike Riley move already, a movable piece, and he's already traded away to Edmonton, we'll talk about him later. But there's really a limited market out here to get a starting quarterback via trade or via free agency. That's one of the areas. That's why I say that this team needs to build from the offensive side. They already have a solid running game, Chris Garrett. Receiving core has a lot of young talent. You look at Chris Matthews, who was the rookie of the year last year, had an incredible year. So there really is, either besides re-signing guys, it's going to be really difficult for them to go out and dip into the free agent market and bring in talent that will be a huge benefit to them.
Daniela, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back for the Western Division of the Canadian Football League. You're listening to Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio with our news reporter and Daniela Franceschi. And I should say that name well because I'm Italian, too. We'll be right back after this.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Do you want to be heard, disagreed with, or just plain shot down? Come on! Be brave! Call the Candid Frank Live Show, a.k.a. the CFL Show. You already hit the link to bring up the player, and you hit the play button so you can hear us. Now hit that little Skype button on that Candid Live player sitting there, like your pet wanting a snack. So to connect with us and tell us your thoughts, hit that little tiny, cute, and tempting Skype button. Right? Now, do it! Or call 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. Welcome back, everyone. Now we'll talk about the West Coast, the Left Coast, the Football Crazy Coast. This is my favorite part of the conversation because these teams matter to the communities they're in. No insult intended for the Eastern Division teams, because Hamilton, Argos, everybody. But something about Saskatchewan.
You nailed it right on the head. This team is looks like already, where we haven't even hit free agency, but they look like they're going all in for 2013 to win the Grey Cup, because they're hosting it back in their own backyard at Mosaic come this November, and that's definitely something that Rider Nation is looking forward to. Rider Nation making the playoffs last year finally after having a dismal 2011, but nonetheless, they competed really hard last year in the playoffs and had a good season overall. But this year, we've already seen, and the addition of G-Roy Simon, going out and seeing them go and get G-Roy Simon from the BC Lions indicates to me and to the fan base of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders that they're willing to do whatever it takes. They're much like it seems like the Argonauts did last year to make the playoffs and win the Grey Cup this year. G-Roy Simon, definitely the biggest acquisition, the move, biggest move made so far this offseason. I think we can both agree upon that.
Absolutely.
G-Roy brings a lot of depth to their team. They have already an incredible receiving core with Weston Dressler, who was a touchdown machine last year. They have Taj Smith, who's a big, tall guy that just absolutely trampled over people last year, that Darian Durant threw the deep ball so successfully with. And Chris Getzlaff, another veteran that just continues to play well for the Riders.
You've got Cortez, their offensive coordinator, who's full of history and credentials. The Calgary Stampeders are well known by Saskatchewan, and Cortez managed their offense. So I'm sure the fans are happy to have him on their side now.
Oh, definitely. And he definitely, this offense is a potent offense. I think it's one of the best in the league right now. I think we're going to see this offense even emerge to even bigger heights and better things than what it did in 2012, which it did have a solid year in 2012. It had an outstanding run game with Corey Sheets, who burned, I know from firsthand watching him live, burned the Argonauts quite a couple times actually, and most notably on Thanksgiving Day, where he absolutely tore them apart, and the Riders came to Toronto and beat them on Thanksgiving Monday. But this team has talent all over the place, and even on the defensive side of the football, they had a defense that really stepped up last year in 2012. But one of the things that they really need to make sure that they can resign and keep this man is Tyron Brackenridge, who was their outstanding, he was their defensive leader, and he was their most outstanding defensive player last season. He had 77 tackles, couple interceptions last year, led them, really did become a leader and led them to the playoffs. And they're definitely looking just to gear up for this Grey Cup run come this free agency period, whether it's via trade or free agency, looking to bring in some more veteran talent, more depth, because as we've seen, depth is always an asset, regardless of what team. And you look at the Argonauts winning the Grey Cup, a championship team, that team had a load of receivers. Everybody stepped up, everybody had a role, and they all played successfully as a unit, and that's why they got there as a team. So the Riders looking to do something similar going into this offseason.
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams are laying in the weeds. You've got Hamilton, you've got Winnipeg, to go back to the east a little bit. I think they know that Saskatchewan's going to be for real this year. And I think Winnipeg has the next Grey Cup, don't they?
I believe it is. I believe so. I would have to check on that.
No worries. I believe they do, and if they do, it wouldn't surprise me that they're laying in the weeds this year and ready to make their big push next year. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting season. And with Saskatchewan, now what we're talking about is a good defense. And they always say a good defense can beat a great offense. Mm-hmm. So the question's going to be, if they make the Grey Cup and represent the West, will the team that plays against them have a good enough defense to beat them? That'll be the big question. On paper.
Yeah.
Only.
I couldn't agree more. But when you look also back at the past couple of seasons, and the Riders know in the back of their mind, especially recently, we've seen – It's rarely happened in the CFL until most recently in 2011 when the BC Lions hoisted that trophy on their home turf. And last year in the Rogers Center where the Argos hoisted that trophy. And I think that sends a message, and especially for the Riders hosting it at home in probably the biggest market in the Canadian Football League where their fans are absolutely diehard and an incredible fan base. They want to send the message right away, and I think that's what the G. Roy Simon move did right away, send the message that they are going absolutely all in to make it, not just to make it, though, to win it. And you talked about it, defense. They have an incredible defense, and especially when we looked at these, we already talked about these except for the Argonauts, but we talked about offense, and the only teams that I could really point out that could hang maybe with the Riders' defense and compete against them, and we also saw it in 2012, maybe I would give the Argonauts certainly that bill because they beat them to make the playoffs, to clinch their playoff spot in Mosaic Stadium, and maybe Montreal. But we still don't know. Montreal is a very big question mark. So you're absolutely right. This team has a potent offense and a defense that hangs right up there with them. This is an all-around team that looks really good heading into the season.
Let's move on to the Calgary Stampeders. The Stamps, they immediately after the Grey Cup was completed, they were the odds-on favorite to win the next Grey Cup. Mm-hmm. I found that kind of strange because there's a whole off-season to consider. But
yep.
I don't know, did you agree with that decision by the odds maker?
Well, heading right after the Grey Cup, and I think when we look at it, there's definitely motivation in Calgary. John Huffnagel's still there. Everything's still in place structure-wise. They have a lot of talent. They didn't really have many free agents. They locked up already Larry Taylor, Eric Fraser. They're guys that are their dynamic playmakers and defensive studs in Eric Fraser. So they've already kept their roster intact. And when you look at it, right away after the Grey Cup, a lot of fans would say, man, that Toronto Argonauts team is pretty good, and how do you beat them again? But when you look at the moves that happened after that with Jim Barker, at this point, I'd look at it, and I'd say the Stampeders probably right up there with the Riders as favorites to win it. And I think that's a bold choice right now from the odds makers right after the Grey Cup. But I think the motivation factor is there. The players are still in place. Everything lines up well for them. I think they can compete with the Riders to be in that Grey Cup game and to win that Grey Cup come November.
Biggest reason, in my opinion, and I love the Argos. I'm an Argo fan. I really believe that Calgary was satisfied with making it to the Grey Cup, and that was the advantage the Argos had.
I agree with you, actually. When you look around that Stampeders team, with all the controversy that they had last year, beginning at the quarterback position and moving throughout the season, and really this team flew under the radar a little bit until we got to that BC game in the Western Final where I think they played their best game of the entire season in that BC game, and that was their peak. They hit their peak. And a lot of Argos fans were concerned if the Argos had hit their peak when they played Montreal in the East Final.
Absolutely.
It appeared that they did not, because they went out and they absolutely destroyed the Stampeders. All those Stampeders, it was a suspect start to that Grey Cup game. Ricky threw an interception right away. But nonetheless, the Argos settled in. The Stampeders never capitalized on that. They just looked like, yeah, you're right, that they were happy to be there. And that's something that John Huffnagel certainly not satisfied with, because he's won a Grey Cup before. He knows how difficult it is to get to those games, especially his team, that team last year that faced so much controversy, so much scrutiny and criticism heading in. It was certainly a great accomplishment, but I think you're right. Overall, the Argos had in mind, we got to win it. We're hosting it. We got to win this. The Stampeders, satisfied to get there.
The Stampeders, key move for them over the offseason?
This team has really got a lot of good playmakers and a lot of talent still in place. Like I said, the roster is more in place than the defending Grey Cup champs are, certainly, and we'll talk about them obviously after. But I would like to see the Stampeders get some more depth, especially at the receiving core. We saw they just lost Romney Bryant to the Argonauts yesterday, actually, Romney Bryant signing with the Argos. So that's something that definitely they want to address and get some more depth on the receiving game. But for me, a big controversy that I think the Stamps will want to avoid, and I don't know if they're in the market doing this right now, but certainly it's a possibility, because Kevin Glenn is a free agent at the end of this upcoming season. Kevin Glenn and Drew Tate. And right now, Drew Tate entered last season as the starting quarterback, taking over for Henry Burris, undisputed number one. He goes into Toronto in week 2, gets injured. Kevin Glenn steps in, leads this team throughout the entire season, leads them to the playoffs, takes over in the playoffs, and says, this is my team. I'm going to lead you to the Grey Cup. Does it? And I think, really, that if he would have won that Grey Cup game, Kevin Glenn had a lot to play for in that 100th Grey Cup game at the Rogers Center, because I think if he would have won, he would be the quarterback for this team and wouldn't have left any doubt in the minds of John Heisenangle or the organization as a whole that he could do it again and be their number one quarterback. Right now, there's two tradable pieces. Really, it's either Drew Tate or Kevin Glenn. Do they choose? I think teams like Winnipeg might be after a quarterback, especially like Kevin Glenn. Guys that just, we've seen Kevin Glenn hop from team to team. He's gone from Winnipeg to Hamilton, where Hamilton, he led them to the playoffs, and yet that wasn't good enough for them. They went and shipped them here to bring in Henry Burris, who, just to note, didn't make the playoffs. So Kevin Glenn, time and time again, has proved everybody wrong. And I think right now that's their biggest decision. They've already re-signed 5 of their 9 potential free agents. They have a lot of their roster intact, and that's why I say they, right now, as of right now today, they could be right up there with the Riders as favorites to win the Grey Cup.
Yes, they could. Moving on to the other Alberta team, the Edmonton Eskimos.
Yes. Certainly a team that has undergone a lot of, they're going to be going for a lot of offensive change because their defense was absolutely stellar, led the league in interceptions. Their secondary was insanely good last year, and nobody could seemingly touch them when it came defensively. But the one thing for them was that they couldn't score enough points to help the defense to win the game. We talked about a few other teams already. I believe it was Winnipeg that we touched. No, it was Hamilton that we touched upon that the defense couldn't keep up for the offense. Here's the exact opposite. The offense couldn't keep up for the defense. And that's something that rarely happens in football, nonetheless. But really, the Eskimos have made one of the biggest acquisitions of the offseason already, and that's QB Mike Riley coming over from BC, where Mike Riley definitely brings in a presence that is refreshing, because we saw last offseason when they brought in Stephen Giles. Although Stephen Giles was a fresh face, it was a new start. A lot of fans were reminiscing of Ricky Ray being in that green and gold uniform come this past season in 2012. And when Stephen Giles hit the field in 2012, although he even beat Ricky Ray, fans were not satisfied, and Kerry Joseph didn't do the job either. And Matt Nichols came in, and he showed some glimpses of promise. And yet he unfortunately gets hurt in the Eastern semifinal against the Argonauts. That looked like a brutal injury, and his career, his future, all that he expects to be back, is still in doubt. And fans will certainly still be. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that position. So Mike Riley sort of finally solidifies the quarterback position that in Edmonton hasn't. They haven't had a good quarterback, obviously, since Ricky Ray, and the fans really still are spiteful of that move, that trade, and Mike Riley brings in a breath of fresh air. They have good talent on the outside. They just extended the contract of Fred Stamps, so they already have Stamps locked in. It appears that he's on board with everything. They have Shamont Chambers, who's one of the youngest players in the league that came out of the draft, straight out of the draft last year, hopped right on in the starting lineup, had a good rookie season. Kerry Koch, another guy that stepped up last year for the Eskimos. They finally have a run game that I think is going to be a solid one this year, because last year they had a three-headed monster that everybody at the beginning, when they heard Corey Boyd, Hugh Charles, and Jerome Messam all on the same team when that happened mid-season, everybody thought, wow, this could be a really special run game. But there was a lot of people that were very cautious about saying whether or not they believed it could happen, and it proved to be that Corey Boyd and Jerome Messam did not fit with this team. They went out, they shipped them out, Messam to Montreal, Corey Boyd released, and Hugh Charles is the back for this team. I think there's a lot more stability in Edmonton, which is something positive even just for the fans. Even if they don't go out and make any more moves right now, regardless, it's the stability factor that should entice fans this year.
The Benavides, the coach of the BC Lions. Let's talk about the BC Lions, our cousins in the West. They release a great receiver. You mentioned G. Roy Simon going to Saskatchewan.
Yep.
A great move for him, since BC wasn't considering him as a first option. And he was going to be a lesser option in the as a receiver. And you know, he and the coaching staff at BC arrived at what I think is a fair and gentlemanly proposition. and Saskatchewan took the bait. What do you think of that move?
Absolutely. I agree with what you just said as well. But more so, I think it's just it was a good move for both teams because of change of scenery, number one, for the players, from G. Roy Simon going to Saskatchewan, especially after the past year he had here where wasn't very good at all, and he had to take the lesser options. He was slowly fizzling out. Man, that's definitely still explosive, definitely can still put up touchdowns, but on a team like Saskatchewan with all their depth at receiver, he'll fit in very nicely. And for this team, they're looking to get younger. They've already made it clear, Sean Gore, who they re-signed actually just recently, they want him to step up. They also released Arlan Bruce, so that indicates that they want a lot younger talent, and they have like I said, Sean Gore, who they hope to be one of their top receivers 2013 and even moving forward beyond that. Offensively, they still have Travis Loulay, so regardless of who you put at that receiver position, as long as they're going to hang on to the ball, Travis Loulay will deliver it properly for you, and the Lions will still be a good team. I don't know if they're going to be a Grey Cup contending team. I don't know if they'll make it to the West Final this year, but certainly I find that they'll be in that Western semifinal game in November. Unsure right now, super competitive, but definitely making significant changes, easing out veteran talent, bringing in some younger talent, kind of makes the change. They still have a solid defense. Caron Williams led the league last year in sacks.
Hello?
12 sacks.
Hello?
Hello?
Really want to get signed, and this is on the offensive
line. Frank?
Offensive line, more specifically in the trenches, is Javon Olafioye, who is right now an FA. If it reaches to Friday's deadline and he is not signed, he will hit the open market. He's been trying to make a jump to the NFL. The Packers actually recently, I believe it was today or yesterday, that they denied him to come over to the NFL because they said he was not in physically enough good shape to play and compete at their level, at their necessary speed and size level that they want over there in the NFL. So he's definitely an asset for the Lions. For me, the most interesting position of any team right now, the most interesting position are the BC Lions at the linebacker position. They have Solomon Elaminian, they have James Juracek, Adam Big Hill, Anton McKenzie, solid men up front at the linebacking corps that any team would love to have, but there's too many of them because we've seen Adam Big Hill stepped up, was had an incredible year in BC last year, was right up with J.C. Sherritt in the
title
race until towards the end of the season. And as well, Elaminian, we know his ability. He jumped to the NFL for training camp last year, came back, didn't get much playing time, was unsatisfied. So we'll see what happens with him. He's going to be in a free agent. Anton McKenzie had a great year. James Juracek had a great year. It's decision time for them at that linebacking position, especially at the middle linebacker between Big Hill and Elaminian. I'm deciding that they're going to take Big Hill, keep him, and let Elaminian walk, but definitely still a decision time for them at that position.
I'm very pleased to say, man, you know your stuff. You're a good man. Hey, now, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll discuss the home team, the Argos.
Yeah, definitely excited for that.
Do you want to be heard, disagreed with, or just plain shot down? Come on, be brave. Call the Candid Frank Live Show, a.k.a. the CFL Show. You already hit the link to bring up the player, and you hit the play button so you can hear us. Now hit that little Skype button on that Candid Live player sitting there, like your pet wanting a snack, so to connect with us and tell us your thoughts. Hit that little tiny, cute, and tempting Skype button, right? Now, do it! Or call 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Welcome back. As promised, we are now going to discuss the Toronto Argonauts. And this team, I think, is going to make it back to the Grey Cup if they can climb over, I'm going to say, Winnipeg. And on the West Coast, I agree with you. BC, Saskatchewan, probably to decide who goes to the Grey Cup. Carry on with the Argonauts. Now, they've had a coach who's eligible to become the coach of the year, one of three.
Mm-hmm.
They have a GM who's proven that he's been able to bring talent in a hurry, build a team. They're the defending Grey Cup champions. What do the champs have to do to repeat?
And the repetition of what they had last year will certainly be tough. The regular season was not very special to begin with, but towards the end it became special. And a lot of key wins along the way, and it began obviously with that clinching game, clinching the playoff spot against Saskatchewan at Mosaic in late October. That was certainly a special moment for that team, a moment where they bonded and unified together. And more so, we also talked about the game against Hamilton, defeating and eliminating their rivals. That brought them even closer together, and nothing really looked like it was going to stop them last year. And they had all the players, and all the pieces were in place. However, Jim Barker, right away, nearly just a few days removed from the championship parade this year, he went out and made a lot of changes, and it's been via releasing a lot of veteran talent, and it hasn't been bringing in a lot of guys. He's done a fair amount of bringing in some younger guys, guys like Darvin Adams, who I think is a dark horse at the receiver position this year for the Toronto Argonauts that might step up and play a bigger role than a lot of fans expect, that they don't know much about him, but we'll get to him in a second in that receiving corps. But the key free agents, of course, Rick Foley, Chad Tackert, they released Ronald Fleming, a longtime Argonaut, released Noel Prefontaine, somebody that Argonauts fans just absolutely adore, releasing Edgy Rokowali, Boulay, who came in from Montreal, was a great addition on special teams and depth-wise just at the safety position, getting rid of Armstead, who fortunately for him and unfortunately for the Argonauts, it was just because he had the door open to the NFL and took the opportunity with the New England Patriots, so good for him on that. And bad for the Argonauts, as much as they're happy for him to have that opportunity, they're definitely going to miss him. In the trenches on the defensive line, they're going to have a lot of new faces that fans might not be so familiar with. The likes of David Lee, Alexander Robinson. These guys might be starting opening day of the 2013 season. Fans aren't very familiar with these people, but they were more second and third stringers last season. We're not going to see Ronald Fleming's up there. We're not going to see Armstead up there. We're not going to see Kowali up there. We might not see Ricky Foley up there. So that leaves a lot of holes. And for an Argonaut team that didn't have many sacks anyway, that couldn't get to the quarterback that much last year, they're definitely going to miss that. Their defense was a ball-hawking defense last year. They created a lot of turnovers. In fact, they had the second most interceptions in the league. They had Pat Watkins, who was named an all-star on the secondary position, DB. And as well, Jordan Younger was right up there with Pat Watkins. They each had five interceptions, which were ranked third and fourth in the league behind the Eskimos, Joe Burnett, and I believe the young man is named Thornton up there, who they just re-signed as well. So there's a lot of talent here, but there's definitely a lot of empty spaces that this team is going to need to fill. And the biggest free agent, in my opinion, regardless of any position that we talked about, regardless of needs and whatever that any team would like to have, I think Chad Tackert. Who wouldn't want to have Chad Tackert on the team? He proved that he can run the ball, that he can catch the ball out of the backfield, that he can be an all-around back. Came in for Corey Boyd, took the criticism, took the scrutiny, was very much placed on a high pedestal, under high profile in a large, big game circumstances, and he stepped up. He had 195 total yards in the Grey Cup, MVP of the Grey Cup game. Who wouldn't want to have the MVP of the Grey Cup on their team? So there's two key free agents for them to re-sign. But more so, when you look deeper on, you got Evan McCullough, you have Cedric Garnier-Marcoux, who I think is a definite need for this team to stay on the offensive line. So there's definitely a lot of spots empty right now. They have no true backup quarterback. What happens if Ricky Ray gets hurt? We saw last year it happened. Jarius Jackson came in. Although he didn't win that many games, He sustained it. He pushed, at least kept them in the playoff race. And that cannot happen this year, because if it does, they have Trevor Harris coming in. And right now, I love Trevor Harris and all, and I think he's a very good young professional quarterback. But that's not going to do it in the Canadian Football League, where he hasn't played or started a game yet. So there's definitely a lot of positions where I think Jim Barker needs to address right now.
Well, he might pick up, just like he did Jarius Jackson, an experienced quarterback that won't mind being second fiddle behind Mr. Ray.
Well,
that's
for me,
about all they can do.
I found a good fit would be Adrian McPherson.
Somebody
that has a lot of experience but is still very, very capable of leading a team and winning games if Ricky Ray got hurt, for instance. Because we saw it with Anthony Calvillo. He's missed games in his career, and most recently he's missed games in 2011, 2010. But yet Adrian McPherson stepped in and was able to lead them, sustain their record, keep them in games, and that's all positives for any team. And for the Grey Cup champs right now, I'm sure they would be willing to take Adrian McPherson off the market, and I would hope as an Argonauts fan to see something like that happen, where we just talked about bringing in a veteran quarterback again or somebody like Adrian McPherson that can fill that void and really be a good, number one, a good teacher, a good learner, because we saw Jarius Jackson teach the likes of Trevor Harris and Zach Kolaros a lot. He was very much happy with his current position as a backup quarterback. Came in, won the Grey Cup, and he actually retired. He wanted to retire as a BC Lion, so that's why he went over and retired there. But it was definitely a good move having him on the team last year.
Okay, Daniele, we took about 32 minutes longer than we were supposed to. And I enjoyed every minute, and I look forward to working with you in the future. And for as long as you're not bored being on our program.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I appreciate it. Thank you guys very much.
Well, you've got Friday come back live, so we'll be able to talk about, maybe with some listeners, what happened at the deadline. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Daniele Franceschi, high school student, football expert, and Argo Admiral. We'll be back right after this. Do you want to be heard, disagreed with, or just plain shot down? Come on, be brave. Call the Candid Frank Live Show, a.k.a. the CFL Show. You already hit the link to bring up the player. And you hit the play button so you can hear us. Now hit that little Skype button on that Candid Live player sitting there, like your pet wanting a snack, so to connect with us and tell us your thoughts. Hit that little tiny, cute, and tempting Skype button. Right? Now, do it! Or call 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250.
Daylight come and me want go
home. Hello. How are we tonight? How are we?
Let's
I've
see
got two
Frank,
fellas on the. Let's go with John first. John Granger's on the phone. Hello, say hello, John.
How are you doing, Frank? Frank, you feeling better?
Oh no.
Okay,
no.
That's enough. I didn't want to ask anything else about you. Anyway, just kidding.
Actually,
Daniele, what a great job. Frank.
Yes,
Daniele,
sir.
I just want to say, what a great job. I think he's definitely going to be the permanent field reporter for the show. Did a super job, and can't wait for his follow-up on Friday.
Well, we'll see what happens starting at 12 noon, and it should be very interesting. We also have another caller from Kitchener. Are you
hey,
there,
Frank,
buddy?
How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah,
and we
Daniele,
have
breath of fresh air. This kid is
absolutely.
Yeah, I've been following him all year as an admiral, watching his YouTube upload videos. So if you haven't got a chance to see some of his uploads, you definitely got to check those out.
Yeah, when I was introduced to him, John introduced me to him, and I introduced myself. He said, I'm Daniele, and I said, I'm history.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's ready to take over everyone's job. He knows it. He's on the ball.
He's a good kid.
Yes, he is.
To me, it does. After tonight and after Blog Talk Radio once again, I have two computers. I've put two computers together so I could log on to this thing, and it refused to log on. And even you can do it by phone, and I had to use the kitchen phone, and I got that to work. It was really pathetic, and I'm sure John was surprised because I was ready to go a long time ago.
All I say, Frank, is, oh, my God.
I mean, really. You know, what we have to do to broadcast, I mean, do people who work at Sportsnet and TSN not appreciate what they have going on? Oh, wait, hang on. They're talented. I forgot. Speaking of talent, we have some more talent. Hello, who else is on here?
Hello, Frank.
Oh, introduce yourself.
It's Jared Harris from the Toronto Rock Roadies, and happen to be a Box J boy, and I also run CFL Fans Fight Cancer.
There you go.
Hi, guys.
So,
Great to have you.
Hmm?
It's great to have you. Thanks for coming aboard.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Who are you, Frank?
Oh, not me?
For me, Frank.
No. Oh, okay. Well, I thought he was being nice. My mistake. Okay. First, Jared.
Yes.
The CFL deadline. The obvious concern has to be for the Argonauts. We don't have to even discuss the main concern they have, which, of course, is Chad Kackert.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond Chad Kackert or any other player, what team do you think can't afford to lose a player like that?
Oh, God. What team? Well, I mean...
It's your choice. Pick any team, anywhere.
Well, I find the BC quarterback is invaluable. Lule, he's good. You don't want to see... Then you look at...
Jared, can I ask you a question? Being
sure.
A Ticap fan,
I'm no expert, guys.
I hear you, but I just from your Ticap perspective point of view, I'm curious. Who are you as a Ticap fan looking for Austin to sign? I mean, are you looking for somebody in defense, obviously? And from what I hear
defense.
The Ticats are willing to open up their walls a little bit, and they're going to go after Foley aggressively. Being said that, who are you looking for as a Ticat fan for the Ticats to get? Anybody in particular?
Defense. You know what? Defense. Well, Foley played for us, and he wasn't happy, but that was under a different defensive scheme and a coaching regime. So we just need frickin' defense, man. Our team was scoring points, but we were letting everyone else walk through the door. I mean, it was so frustrating as a fan. So you know what? I'm no expert. I'm a fan, and I just want to see some. I want to see some people up front. We need guys in the backfield. I mean, we need to clean house.
Are you going to be disappointed? Are you going to be disappointed if Hamilton doesn't do anything aggressively, or are you going to let them play this year as a more or less write off year and a rebuilding year? And speaking of being a box boy, what kind of a box are you guys going to have in Guelph?
Well, we've been ensured that we'll have a similar location in the stadium like we had in Iverwind, which is Box
Good.
J, which was behind the bench. And every game next year is an away game for these guys. I don't think they're going to mail it in. I think it's a rebuilding year for Austin. I think he's going to go out hard after it. I was talking, actually, to a former Ticat who plays on the Argos, and who was coached under Austin in Saskatchewan, and says he's a real player's coach and he'll get the guys to play for him. So that's what I'm hoping for. You know, the offense came out slinging, and I want the defense to come out pounding.
Do you really think he's a long-term coach for the Ticats?
Well, they've given him the keys to the castle, right?
Yeah, but they've given him the keys, and I think he's basically, I really truly believe that he's taking the template that Barker used here, and he's going to get up close and personal with the players that he has and really have a deep understanding of, you know, the kind of team he has, and then make a decision on a coach and the players that he can get. And I think that's why the Argos had some success, because the GM really understood what was lacking. And, you know, Hamilton had a great offense, like you said. Mm-hmm. Their defense wasn't very good, but, you know, they could have played better with a couple of breaks.
Absolutely.
You know, and this is what happens in the game.
Well, again, I feel Coach Cortez lost the room halfway through the year. When the Cats played in Hamilton, the crowd was behind them. You know, but when they played away, he lost the room. I really think he did. I mean, when he comes in and says this isn't a democracy, it's a dictatorship or something, and you start your training camp off that way. Come on.
You know, it's okay to make it a dictatorship, but you shouldn't talk about it.
Well, you got to be a leader, and you have to make tough decisions, but to totally devalue your players in that way, I don't agree with that.
No, I hear you, but the Argos devalued a player, Corey Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
They did it in a polite way. They just let him go freely.
Yeah,
and
Milanovic had good words to say about him. I mean, he did.
Absolutely, absolutely. No. And at the end of the day, though, that is a dictator. I mean, this guy was a quality back as far as everybody else figured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was supposed to be a quality back. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, Milanovic saw something in Kakert and felt that, you know, the system would work better with Kakert than it did with Boyd. And they said that when they made the move, and
mm-hmm.
they were right.
Many ways it did. I mean, so, you know, similar decision was made in San Francisco with the No Fun League, right? And look what happened there.
Yeah.
Coaches, that's what they're hired to do, is see the potential, see the talent, and sometimes roll the dice.
Well, guys, I got to stop you. I'm taking full credit on the Kakert thing. No, seriously, 2 years ago when he started off, he was the loner on Family Day. Nobody even bothered asking for an autograph. I knew after that preseason game in Winnipeg when he just put the wheels and did that scissor kick and took off. I told him and I asked him to sign my jersey. I only asked 4 people in 15 years to sign it. I said, you're going to be one of them. So here, sign it now. November 3rd of last year, we played the last home season game. I got invited to the dressing room by special invitation and all that stuff. And I had a special meeting with the coaches. And I said, keep Kakert. You've got to keep him. You've got to have him on board. I even went into the dressing room, had a prayer with the players and stuff, and afterwards spoke to Kak, and I said, I put a good word for you. You've got to show up this game. So, yeah, I'm taking full credit for Kak. Thank you very much.
He's a dynamic guy, and he's very, very fun to watch, for sure.
He's not very big either.
No. Well, that's you got to love the grit, right?
Absolutely.
Yep.
He's a bowling ball.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Rocky Blyer. I don't know if anybody remembers who that is, but that's who he reminds me of.
Did we have television back those days, Frank?
You know, it ain't that far back, because the quarterback's on television now, and he's at every Super Bowl. So, you know, he was handed the ball by Bradshaw, so stop.
Okay.
It ain't that old. Okay, maybe it is.
All right.
Mean Joe Green. Coke? Anyone?
Ooh!
Frank. Well, No. That has nothing to do with the story that we saw today on the news, John. Don't sidetrack yourself. He did a Coke commercial with a kid in the jersey. You must know that commercial.
Yeah.
Now, the CFL this year is going to be really interesting, in my opinion, because Hamilton is not in the stadium they belong in, but they will be in a better stadium come next year, following year, I should say. You've got Winnipeg getting a new stadium. You've got Montreal already in a really good stadium, and you've got Saskatchewan putting in a new stadium. Edmonton, I think they retrofitted theirs a little while ago. I'm wondering how long it's going to take to have a stadium out there on the East Coast. Does anybody figure there might be a team out there? at some point in the next few years?
I think it's
going to go on. Well, okay, I'll throw my 3 seconds in. Nope, not going to happen. If anywhere if it's going to go, it should go to Quebec. Quebec's got such a strong foundation, the whole province, with their grassroots football and the high school football.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hot in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
I know everybody's saying, you know, they should go out to Nova Scotia and New Brunswick or
New
whatever.
Newfoundland.
Yeah, it's just not feasible to go out there. The ratio of people in the circumference of the city is just not doable. You'd have to drive pretty far just to go and come and see a game. But Quebec,
Saskatchewan,
on the other hand. Well,
they do it in Saskatchewan, right?
Right, but we're talking about major, major history and roots that develop that kind of following, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You don't got that in New Brunswick.
They've got
some
pretty good college teams. They've got some pretty good college teams on the East Coast.
I hear you. But if you're talking about where is it going to go, I think it should go to Quebec before it goes out farther east. I really
Why not go both and then have the crossover team from the east going to the west?
That would make for an expansion nightmare. I got to agree. I think Quebec minor football has a very sound base. There's a passion for the game out there. Not that there isn't in the East Coast, but I think with the success of the Laval team, university team, I think it's ridiculous not to put something there and then continue moving west. But mind you, I would love to see some of the oil money or whatever get out there in Halifax or Moncton and, you know, build that 30,000-seat stadium or that 25,000-seat stadium, because I believe in the East Coasters. They like their football.
They've turned the corner economically.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, the East Coast this year will be hosting a game which hasn't been decided yet, but my money's on Hamilton being the home team there.
I'd almost want it to be the Labor Day Classic, because Toronto can't turn the stadium around, and they're sure as hell not going to.
Hey, great idea! That solves the problem.
You're talking about schedule here. This is ridiculous. The schedule I hear it's being delayed. I heard today it's being delayed by a West Coast team. I thought it would be the Toronto Blue Jay Labor Day issue that would be delaying it. No, it turns out it's a West Coast team that's delaying even the feeler that they send out to the team saying, here's our first draft. What do you guys all think? Any objections? That hasn't even come out yet. So this schedule thing is, it's ridiculous. I mean, it should be out. It's causing a nightmare for the front office for every franchise, because they can't get their groups set up. They can't get the dates set up, the hotels. It's crazy. So you're talking about the schedule, Labor Day. We're not going to have one. Okay, it's just not going to happen. There's a 99%
chance. That's just plain ridiculous.
Yeah, guys, what I heard was that it was a perfect storm, because something about if you guys play on Labor Day, then it screws you for two other games or something, and there wouldn't be any games at any home games for you guys for over a month, or just something really unfortunate like that.
I'll give you the update on the Labor Day situation. Here's the situation: the Blue Jay management who deal with the turnover of the turf to baseball to football says that there is not enough time frame from the Sunday afternoon game to the Monday game that they would have the Argo Labor Day game on now.
Right.
But I still don't see that if they push the date earlier, like 11 o'clock start on the Sunday, and maybe push the, instead of making it a 3 o'clock afternoon game, why not do it a 7 o'clock evening game for the Labor Day? Just put it on Labor Day. But the situation is the Blue Jays don't want
to
budge on this.
No.
And, of course,
you're not gonna get
them, they're the number one tenant. So that's the story. We're not going to get it. And, of course, you can't go to Guelph because, it's supposed to. Well, first of all, I heard that Guelph was pretty hurt by the Ticats not even approaching them with the idea. They heard it through the news that they might be a possibility that the Argos are not going to be playing it in the Sky Dome. And then when they heard it secondhand, they were a little bit offended that nobody came to them. Okay. Then again, why is McMaster not getting involved here, Jarrett? I mean, you know, as a Ticats fan, I don't hear any.
I'll tell you what I heard. What I heard was. There was rumors flying everywhere, and that's the same with this stadium fiasco. But what I heard was it's a safety concern.
Absolutely.
That it is the first It's basically the first week, full weekend of university, so Frosh Week's going to be going on there. And you know that we as dedicated CFL fans like to celebrate our game on Labor Day with some lovely Canadian barley and hops brewed in fantastic ways. And I think they're basically concerned for the safety and well-being of the students, which I find really troubling, because all they would have to do is fence off the area, you know, in a safe way, and just kind of, you know, spend the $10,000 on fencing and have the Toronto fans and the Hamilton fans come in. Because it's not just Toronto fans they're afraid of. They're afraid of the CFL fans. They're afraid of the safety. That's basically it with the students. Because, they would play two or three games in the summer, and then the majority of the games would be while the student body was in place. And while it would be a windfall for the university, and I did hear rumors that I can't substantiate, but Mr. Braley kind of stepped up and said, hey, I built a $10 million stadium here, and you're not going to have the Ticats play, but that's neither here nor there.
Jared, all I can say to that is it worked in Montreal.
Oh, okay. I agree, man.
Right,
I agree.
The stadium is right in the student body buildings. You know, it worked there. Around the time. You know, they don't have night classes.
When they wanted to build at Varsity, I live in Toronto, and when they wanted to build at Varsity, I was in a condo three blocks away, and I was freaking out because this was like, oh my God, I can tailgate on my condo balcony and off to the game, right? Like, and what pulled the trigger was the woman's residence right behind the university saying there are safety concerns and we're concerned for the well-being of our student body. Which is BS, right?
Like, yeah, no. The safety they're concerned about are the people who live in the area. They don't want to deal with the complaints.
Yeah, and you know what?
I think that's the real concern.
The real concern is, I'm sorry, but if I saw anyone harassing or bugging a student, and I can say this for a lot of my Toronto Argonaut friends, my CFL friends, if we saw anyone getting a hard time, we would say something. We would, you know, like, come on. You know, this
Jared, they're stereotyping every CFL fan by already saying that they're fearful of these so-called scenarios happening.
And
that's ridiculous.
I haven't seen a CFL hooligan riot yet, have you?
No.
Well, we joke about the Argo fan celebration downtown, waiting for lights to turn green before they go onto the street. Like, and then when they turn red, they go off the street.
I love the cops after the Grey Cup. Like, they were waiting for something. I don't think they really were waiting for something. They just had everything in place. Everyone was just having a good time, man. It's Grey Cup. It's not this other stuff. It's Grey Cup.
Jared, how many police officers as friends we made that night. I mean, a lot of them joined the Bolt logo page just because they're fans now. It was a festive. That's what you call the real party of fans getting together. So for McMaster to already prejudge it, to say it's going to be hooligan, you know,
it's both universities. It's U of T and it's McMaster. And McMaster, but McMaster doesn't want to be known as a sports school. They want to be known as an academic school. Not McMaster, sorry, U of T. I mean, that's one of the statements they released. Believe me, I followed that because I wanted that stadium. I remember when the Argos practiced there, you know, and they had a picture of them.
Absolutely.
With the CN Tower in the background. And I mean, like, this is awesome. It's awesome for the downtown. It's going to really, really expose the game to a new demographic and bring in more fans. It's going to be a fantastic, it's TTC accessible. And what happened?
Well,
pulled the trigger.
Jared. I if we go to the UFT scenario, the real thing that killed the whole thing, it wasn't the women's people rights or whatever, or the shelters or the schools. It was literally, it came down to parking. And because of the parking was not available, because of the real estate that was expensive down there, it came basically down to the parking. There was no viable way of them to ever seeing hosting a playoff game, or and when that place gets crazy down with the museum was under construction, there's so many things at the time that was going on. They just literally said, you're not going to get it because of parking. Period. End of story.
Well you know, guys, that's the both comments can be true. They're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. No, they are.
You've got varsity. I believe what was said, and that is that U of T doesn't care about football. And at that time, you might remember that I think U of T was on a run of 45 losses in a row or something?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they made themselves clear on how they feel about football. You know, they didn't care about it. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with them not being big fans of football. I was more unhappy with what happened with BMO Field than I was with varsity. That turned my crank.
That's an interesting thing, because when I was at one of the games when Sokolowski and the guys were on the team, and I had a knee injury, and I was actually going up the elevator in Skydome, and I happened to meet the owner of the team, and he said, well, you're from Hamilton. He said, what would you prefer, an outdoor game or an indoor game? And I said, you know, Mr. Sokolowski, with all due respect, football is an outdoor game, and it's meant to be played outdoors, so if I had a choice, I'd go to BMO Field. And he said, oh, you know, it makes sense, right? But, you know, to each his own. I mean, I like watching the game. Although I like the luxury of tailgating. You know, we get to tailgate in Hamilton, and which might be stifled the parking lot J, where we usually park and tailgate. That might be turned into an actual civic park, and where there'll be no parking. So that could make things interesting.
Oh, boy.
Well, Jared, I heard a little bit of good news for you. One of the end zone sides, they're going to have it, the opposite end of it, supposed to be like a big tailgate, and then basically everybody's in the tailgate moves right into the stadium. So they don't want the tailgate away from the stadium anymore. It caused too many traffic woes, too many. You know what I'm talking about. I tailgated with you guys in the parking lots, and it's always when the game starts. You know, there's the fans crossing the streets, roads. All it took was a couple of people to get nudged by a car and a bus hit, and it's become a big stickler. And you're not going to have tailgates away from the stadium. So what I think in their design, okay, after the Pan Am games are finished, they're supposed to clear up behind the end zone some area where they're going to have always a tailgate. A tailgate for the visitors, and then the other end zone is supposed to be a tailgate for the home team. Like, you know what I mean? Which I think is a great idea.
If that's the case, I hope it's a real tailgate and not a cash bar tailgate.
It's not going to be one of those homey tailgate things that you guys are used to, and I love them with the barbecue. You're still going to, I hear your point, but you know they're losing money when you guys are partying without buying the beers from them. You know that. So it's going to, just
believe
be prepared,
me,
Jared.
Believe me.
Hang on a second, John.
Beers of the tailgate were just primers for the beers we bought in the stadium.
Absolutely, and no. I'm with you on that, John. You know, the whole thing about the Ticats is that it's a ritual, and if you take part of the ritual away, you're going to take away the incentive of some people to buy tickets, because that tailgate thing in Hamilton. Hamilton fans are different than Argo fans. We put up with the fact that we don't have a tailgate place.
Yeah,
they won't.
We don't have a choice.
There is a small tailgate that does go.
They're
going
to have a tailgate place, but what I'm saying to you is that when they have a chance to plan this thing and see where it's viable for them, and also for safety concerns, they're going to back it up with, okay? It's going to be basically they want the Ticat fans to be as safe as possible when they come visit their games. So they're not going to have them tailgate in the parking lots. They're going to be 3-4 blocks away.
No, I get that.
You want to hear?
It's going to be underground, okay? Your parking lots are hopefully going to be turning into underground around the houses there. So you're not going to see them outside. So they're going to have areas where you're not going to have to be around vehicles and all that stuff, where people can actually tailgate, come early in the morning, set up your own things. You know what I mean? Like they usually do. The cars being around.
I can speak to that, because I actually know the person who's sitting on the committee to try and figure out what to do, and I know him very well because I work closely with him with the cancer charity fundraising. They're going to park us out by the steel plants and bus us in. That's the tentative. They're not going underground. It's a $110 million stadium. They don't have the money for that. This is a bare bones It's get the biggest money probably spent will be on the FIFA regulation field, because that's what it is. It has to be FIFA regulation. This is going to be a bare bottom cantilevered stadium where there'll be a large mezzanine where you can walk in, and more toilets and more vendors and everything. But it could very well be on time, because you don't have the bells and whistles of Winnipeg, right?
True.
And they're talking about, you know, bussing us in. And I looked at him and I said, "You gotta be kidding me! Like you're gonna bus us in?" And he said, "Well," he says, "if they make it a civic park, that's all we can do." And I said, "For God's sakes, you know, we're gonna have to rent some yard space in some of the neighbors' yards or something and tailgate there, because holy doodle, like that's just, I mean, we'll still be there. I'm a Ticats fan and I'm a CFL fan and we'll still be there and I'll still go to my 3 or 4 Argos games every year, but
Jared, if that's gonna happen, you know, as opposition fan, my wheels are ticking away here, thinking we're gonna stop traffic somewhere when the buses are on the way to the stadium. We're gonna make sure you guys get stuck in the traffic jam. If they do that, you leave the door open, buddy.
Well,
tell them it's a bad idea.
We got 2 feet. We can walk. It's
Argo fans first. Will be showing up with a basket of tomatoes.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to get back to this, did you happen to pick this up, what Foley's been tweeting out tonight?
No.
What?
Well, apparently, this is what's coming over just before we went on the air tonight. It is on record that Barker has made an offer, and that it's on record that Foley will take a pay cut just to stay.
Yeah. Right.
Now, that's been put out by CFL Mobile. So, Nick Quinn, who is close with Foley, has been tweeting this. And Foley, for the last 2 hours, has nonstop, every minute, tweeted every CFL fan and every Argo fan that has put him and Chad Cacker in the same tweet. And, it's kind of blowing up on Twitter right now.
Well, so he feels he's coming back then.
Yeah, he definitely feels, and so does the CFL putting out that release and saying that he's willing to take a pay cut, and Barker has made the offer.
And then you have Cackert. The budget on Cackert will be more reasonable then.
That's right. That's right. They're kind of like teaming up here.
Yeah. They're doing that Miami thing.
Right.
Well, good stuff, Kevin. Good stuff. Thanks for giving us that little heads up there. Well,
you guys are on such a roll. I didn't want to jump in. I think it's the Canadian in me, right? Being so
polite.
Thanks for
that. No, that's not wrong with that.
Oh, please. The Canadian in you just jumped out front, and the tie cat just went in the rear. What?
Well, you know,
went backwards.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, listen.
He was looking at the.
Guys, we're running out of time here. We're down to our last minute and change. I'll give you guys 10 seconds each. CFL story next year. What's going to be the big story next year?
Go ahead.
You first.
Okay, my story is happy birthday, Frank.
Thanks.
Yeah, happy birthday, Frank.
Next.
Well, my story's about this Friday. The Grey Cup's going to be at the Toronto Rock game. Some of the guys are going to be there. And a bunch of CFL fans are meeting at Joe Badali's for a meet and greet. So come on by and have some beer and food with us and go to the Rock game.
I got to do my show on Friday, but if you guys can work out some sort of Wi-Fi, I'll be glad to go. I'm going to work out on the technology side of it and see if we make it happen.
I'm working with the Rock on that, Frank.
There you go, buddy. All right, listen, guys, it was a pleasure. I had a nice chat. We'll have to do it again sometime. And, John, you didn't complain about the extra half hour today.
Happy birthday, Frank.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Thank you for joining us tonight for the Candid Frank Live Show, heard on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10:30 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great night, everyone.